What's good, everyone? My name is Jacob Moses, community builder at Strongtowns, and welcome to It's the Little Things, a Strongtowns podcast where in each episode, we focus on a different action that you, the concerned citizen, the elected official, the city planner, can take to make your town stronger. This episode's action? Using tactical urbanism to create safer streets. At Strongtowns, we often discuss how tactical urbanism, the low-cost, low-risk interventions to create more productive places, is an essential element to a strong town. And it makes sense. As cities address important yet complex goals, such as growing the local economy or creating more bike infrastructure, it'd be unwise to put all hopes and funding into a silver bullet, top-down project that, admittedly, probably won't work out. For Austin Taylor, however, this episode's guest, tactical urbanism meant more than creating productive places. It meant saving lives. As Austin recently wrote on the Strongtown site, following the death of 15-year-old Provo resident Caleb Lane, he and his peers at Bike Walk Provo knew they could use tactical urbanism to immediately make the streets safer. And with only $275, community buy-in, and a few inexpensive materials, Austin and his peers demonstrated how anyone can create safer streets in their own neighborhood. In this episode, Austin shares the story behind the Tactical Urbanism Project and how you can do a similar project in your own neighborhood, including how to encourage a sense of urgency, how to collect and respond to feedback, and how to get your local government involved in the process. Enjoy. Austin, what's good, man? How are you today?
I'm great. How are you doing, Jacob?
I'm doing good, thank you. How's life in Provo?
Everything's great. It's a warm day. I just got done leading a bike tour with a group of local college kids. That was a really fun thing.
What a great way to start the day. What were you showing them? Some infrastructure around town? What was the purpose of that tour?
Yeah, so that tour, it's part of a class. It's right before the semester starts. It's to show students the public transportation, show them biking and walking infrastructure, show them a little bit of downtown. And so the class today was focused on biking infrastructure. So I took a couple of professors and their students, about 20 in total. We saw a lot of the new bike infrastructure and a lot of the stuff that's going in currently.
Well, Austin, so excited to have you on the podcast, man. You're a member of the Strong Towns movement. Dope dude doing excellent work in Provo. And we have a great action to discuss together today, and one that I know you recently knocked out in Provo, and that is using tactical urbanism to create safer streets. Austin, before we dive too deep into it, I would love to hear from you, someone who's actually made this happen in their community. For folk who are new to Strong Towns, perhaps unfamiliar with this term, tactical urbanism, how would you define it for folk?
Tactical urbanism is a temporary redesign to show something or to demonstrate something. And so in our case, we redesigned the street, but you can redesign any public space for a temporary amount of time to show what it could be, how much better it could be. Most of the time, tactical urbanism is done with a really low budget and done by volunteers, but it could also be taken on by people in government too.
Yeah, that's a great definition, Austin, and you're exactly right. We see several different examples of tactical urbanism, I know. Here in Denton, we recently put some like DIY like planter beds in near a neglected park. We've seen people, you know, do murals in neglected alleyways. And as you mentioned, y'all use tactical urbanism to create a safer street in Provo. Austin, I would love to hear or have you share the story of what prompted this project. It's a tragic, sobering story. However, I think it's really important to share, especially for listeners who may be new to Strongtowns, because it really captures the sense of urgency that we sometimes need to embrace behind tactical urbanism. Yes, as you said, sometimes we do it to activate neglected spaces. But this instance, I mean, this is an intervention that we have to do to save lives. Will you tell us a little bit about that story?
Really, the way that we design our streets, it's more than just the amount of time it gets to and from places. The way we design it really is life or death. And if it's done poorly, it can mean the death of someone. So unfortunately, 2 years ago, this is 2017, a young boy in the neighborhood, I think he was in his early teens, he was walking to our local rec center, which is a really popular place for kids and seniors to walk to, because he was crossing a street, which it's a pretty narrow street. It doesn't seem like it's that unsafe. Someone who was driving didn't see him and hit him and killed him. And this prompted a lot of people in the area to rise up and to speak out about unsafe streets. So I was with a group of citizens that had a march in his remembrance. We walked around the area in silence. Afterward, the city did act on this as we were speaking up against it. So the city on that same crosswalk put in a concrete median with flashing lights on that crosswalk instead of what was just painted lines before.
Now, Austin, give listeners a mental image of this street, because as I read the story that you recently wrote for Strong Towns, and listeners, I'll make sure to add it to the show notes below the player to give y'all some good imagery in addition to the tips that Austin's going to share today. But you know, a lot of times whenever we talk about pedestrian deaths, it's often reserved for what at Strong Towns we call strodes. So listeners, if this is a new term for you, these are street networks where it's supposed to build community wealth. Maybe it has amenities nearby, such as, you know, a rec center, neighborhood services. But the design of the road is built more like a road where you have that highway design, cars driving fast. But also in this instance, this was a road that I would imagine many listeners see in their own neighborhoods. Could you give listeners a mental image of what this area was like?
If you want to look it up on Google Maps, it's 500 North in Provo and 300 West. So there are two lanes, no turning lane, and a buffered bike lane on both sides. I think in total, the road is somewhere between 35 and 40 feet wide. So it's not a monster strode. This is a typical neighborhood street that it does get more traffic than usual. I think it's classified as a collector road at least. It's something that didn't seem unsafe to begin with, right? But the type of crosswalk that was there before, it was insufficient for the amount of foot traffic that it gets. The Tactical Urbanism Project that I wrote in the article that I wrote about, that was part two of this series of Tactical Urbanism Projects in that area. So the first one we actually did 2 years ago on that same exact street where the boy was hit and killed on 500 North. This was before there was that nice crosswalk. This was before there were even bike lanes. We painted those things. We painted a high visibility crosswalk. It had the 3D style to it. We painted bike lanes. That's part of the reason as well why the city added those things in later, is because we showed how much better it could be.
So Austin, following the death of this young man, the city responded appropriately. You know, they recognized that this crosswalk is not adequate for the kind of pedestrian activity we have over here. Let's put in something more suitable. And then y'all came in, your excellent group, Bike Provo, Bike Walk Advocacy Group, came in with this Tactical Urbanism Project. Could you describe what this project looks like for folk who may be unfamiliar?
I'll talk about the two parts of the series. So the one that was 2 years ago, part one, it was, like I said, it was on that street, 500 North. And what we did is we had curb extensions at the intersections. That's where the curbs jut out into the road a little bit to narrow the intersection. So we did that with hay bales and paint. And then on the crosswalks, we had high visibility crosswalks. One of them was your typical bar crosswalk, but with a 3D shadow underneath it. So it looked to drivers as if it were a 3D crosswalk or a bump in the road. One of the crosswalks, it had a painting of a mom duck and baby ducks following it.
Yeah, creative crew in Provo.
Yeah, and at the biggest intersection, we actually did a mural, a geometric, a bunch of triangles in different colors that covered the whole intersection. And the purpose of that was just to slow people down. Right, you don't expect that kind of thing when you're driving through a street. And it really worked, as we saw people driving through, they would slow down so they could see what was going on. And then I guess lastly, we painted bike lanes on that street, buffered bike lanes. But the buffer is, it's like a an open area, just a paint between the bike lane and the car lane. So you get even more room separating people biking and people driving.
That's remarkable, Austin. And here in a little bit, I want to dive deeper into the observations that you and your peers made. But I want to rewind just a little bit. So you'll have this idea that you want to have a second take at some tackle urbanism on this stretch of street. What was this process like gathering your peers? Like, I imagine there's listeners who, as you're describing what the street was like, the ways in which drivers drive down it, I imagine streets are coming to mind where they can see themselves doing a similar project for their own community. What was this like pitching this idea to your peers to try and make this happen in Provo?
What's nice is we had already done it once before in 2017. That was the project that I just described. And there was incredible momentum from that. Everyone that was involved in that before, they wanted to repeat something like that. They wanted to do it again. In recruiting people, it's very helpful to already have organizations that advocate for biking and walking. Most of the people that we had in both part one and part two of this Tactical Urbanism series, they had already been involved in our group Bike Walk Provo. We reached out to people who were running for office. We have city council seats up for grabs. And so we invited everybody who was running for city council to come to that, the part two one that we did this year. And I would say at least somewhere around half of the people running for city council came as well and helped out.
That's great, Austin. Was that integral to making this second part happen, being able to have some local government buy-in? Because I imagine it's helpful to be able to have a champion in government who, you know, is perhaps willing to temporarily close that street while you put in the project, or maybe just some leadership to get other members of local government involved. How essential was having a few of those champions?
We thought that it was necessary to have city approval on this one. And on the past one, we had city approval as well. So what we did to get city approval on this project was we went to the Public Works Department. The engineers in Public Works are over the streets. And we drew out what we were looking to do. So our part two was roundabouts, curb extensions, and bike sharrows. And so we said, hey, on this stretch of 300 West from 500 North to 200 North, we want to paint curb extensions, a roundabout, and bike sharrows. And we're going to do it in cornstarch paint that will wash off in the next rainstorm. We don't need any government money. All we need from you is your permission to do this. We were thrilled to hear that they were fine with it, that they would approve it, and even that they closed off the road for us that night as we painted it. So it was really helpful. Some people, when they do tactical urbanism, they'll do it without city approval, and that's fine. That's another great way to do it. For us, we want to keep a working relationship with our city. The goal of these two projects are to mainly show city government how much better the street could be with just a little bit of paint, with just a little cost. And so we wanted to keep that working relationship with them by asking for permission first, rather than doing it and making them mad and then creating enemies with them.
Yes, awesome. That's an excellent point. And listeners, one that I want you to really understand, with any citizen-led investment, it's not citizen versus local government. Of course, with anything we do, whether it's taking an incremental approach to, you know, making investments in our neighborhoods or creating safer streets, we also want our elected officials and our transportation engineers and our traffic engineers to take this similar process as well. We may have some more unorthodox approaches at first, using paint and hay bales. But of course, this is a philosophy that we want our elected officials as well to adopt. That's an excellent point, Austin.
Thanks.
So I'm curious, Austin, y'all put out these hay bales. You got these crazy characters on your crosswalks. You have these high visibility bike lanes. How did people respond? I'd first love to know how drivers respond. You gave us a little insight that's saying, you know, they slowed down, which was the ultimate goal. But how did the community respond? And I understand y'all had a survey of some sort afterwards. Just tell us overall what people were feeling about this project.
Yeah, so I'll talk about part two, the feedback of part two. That was the one this year where we had just painted curb extensions, bike sharrows, and a roundabout. So the first night when we opened it up after we painted, a bunch of us sat there and watched at the roundabout to see if people would get it.
And this is just flat paint. Nothing's lifted.
Well, here's the thing is that the city engineer said, hey, you're going to have to put these vertical panels up. And they provided those like orange traffic cones to go around the circle because their fear was that people wouldn't see the roundabout at nighttime and they would go straight through it and people would crash. Anyways, the vast majority of people recognized it as a roundabout, slowed down, and drove around it. It was awesome to see that.
That's awesome, man. Yeah.
We really wanted to see what people thought about it. Because with part one in 2017, we just put the stuff out there and, you know, monitored social media, see what people thought. But we wanted to get more feedback this go around. And so what we did is we took some signs, like the kinds that people would use in city council campaigns. And on them, we taped some pieces of paper, wrote a description of the project saying this is a temporary thing, a temporary redesign. This is not the city doing it. No taxpayer money is spent on this. And this is to see what the street could be like. And what do you think about it? And so we got all sorts of responses. We got positive responses, people saying, I ride my bike on the street every day. The sharrows make me feel like I belong here, and I love it. I didn't mention part of this is we also put out some benches on the park strip, that grassy area between the sidewalk and the street. And some of the negative responses were, hey, you put out a bench, and homeless people are going to come hang out by my house. And it's like, okay, you make a nice place, people will come. You have a problem with that? Another person was like, now you're going to get more people walking past my house. And I hate that. like, you know, NIMBYs don't pull out any excuse they can. right? I would say, though, that it was pretty evenly split, the positive comments and the negative comments. And a lot of the negative comments were, they didn't understand. A lot of them were saying, why are you spending my taxpayer money on this? We didn't spend any government money on this. And another was, they assumed we were the city. They were saying, why are you starting this construction project when you have so many going on already?
This was what, Austin? Like $275? Did I read that right?
Yeah, $275. So that bought us 50 pounds of cornstarch off eBay, some food coloring, some hot dogs for everybody. You know, it was really cheap. But I would say the people who understood it were the people who saw it positively.
What's the first step, do you think, in educating folk on a project like this? Like, of course, if you're taking part in it, you understand the vision, you see the benefit, whether you're an elected official participating or just an active member of the community like yourself. But for the folk who, you know, this is totally new, I sympathize with them being like, this is strange. Like, I drive through here all the time. Why is there now this crosswalk with ducks on it? Where do you think we start to educate folk on this?
Yes, I can tell you what we tried to do. And on this time, the part two, with those signs, we also had signs that were dedicated to each feature of the project. So we had a sign describing what a curb extension is. It narrows the roadway so that when you're walking across it, you're not as vulnerable. We had a sign talking about what a roundabout is. You know, it slows cars, but it keeps the traffic flow going. And we had a sign talking about what a sharro is. So I think that helped a lot. It educated people as to what those things are. And then after we had painted everything, and before the first rainstorm, we invited people from the city government that had a role in shaping how our streets were. We invited them to walk on that route with us. No one showed up, but
that's all right.
We got good pictures. Yeah, we got good pictures, and we sent them those pictures. So they can't say they didn't see it.
That's right.
I would encourage anybody listening to this to go to the article that are out on Strong Towns, because it's one thing to describe what it looked like, the roundabout, the curb extensions, but it's much easier to understand when you actually see the pictures of it.
That's right. And listeners will include that article in the show notes for y'all to check out. So Austin, y'all did this great project. Y'all collected some great anecdotes and data. Tell me a little bit about the aftermath. Like, of course, this is a demonstration of y'all's vision of how we can create safe streets throughout Provo. It's one project. We want to see this, of course, duplicated all throughout Provo, likely. What were some of the conversations like afterwards?
Most of the people who were involved in the project, we volunteers, we felt that it was a good success. It didn't last as long as we had wanted it to. There was a rainstorm that same week and it was washed off. But we got good pictures of it. We got a lot of comments. We made sure that the important people that designed the streets saw it as well. And we also got a promise from our public works department to paint sharrows and painted curb extensions, similarly to what we had painted on there. You know, we've yet to see them, but we did get a promise that they would go in.
Oh, how cool. That's good news. At first, I thought you said they gave you a promise that you guys had permission to start painting curb extensions in.
No, that would be amazing. It would get done so quickly if they just said, hey, go do it.
That'd be done end of day.
Yes.
Maybe that third part. Very cool, Austin. This was a phenomenal series of projects that y'all pulled off in Provo. Were there any particular resources that were inspiration for y'all to help you guys create this project that other listeners could benefit from?
Oh, absolutely. So I own the book Tactical Urbanism by Mike Lydon and Anthony Garcia. If you just look up Tactical Urbanism, it might be that same website. Anyways, they have a materials guide on what materials are easy and cheap to use in tactical urbanism projects. So they'll talk about the different temporary paints. They'll talk about potted plants and hay bales and even sorts of activities and programming like human chess or something that you can do in the redesigned public spaces. I would absolutely point everyone towards that.
I got it pulled up now. It looks like it's tacticalurbanismguide.com. And listeners will make sure to put that into the show notes. And as Austin described from the start, whatever the issue is in your town, there's a way that you can take a DIY approach, get your peers involved, get local government involved, whether it's, you know, trying to slow the cars on a dangerous stretch of street, activating a neglected alley, put some crosswalks in, all sorts of cool ideas. And Austin, I appreciate you sharing slowing down the cars. I know I'm inspired and imagine listeners are as well.
Yeah, thanks so much. And if people, again, you can do it with government's blessing, you can do it without, and both of those are valid ways to do it. Just make sure you don't end up in jail. That's the only thing I'd say.
That's right. And you don't have to break the bank either. There's $275 for this particular project, which is very extensive. But imagine if maybe that first project y'all did, just bike lanes, probably a fraction of the cost, just choose that. The next small project you guys want to do to address a struggle and iterate from there. That's awesome. Well, Austin, this has been a joy. I appreciate sharing your experience with us. If any listeners want to connect with you, learn more about all the great work you're doing, where can people find you online?
So I would direct them towards the advocacy group that was in charge of these projects. That's Bike Walk Provo. The website also is bikeprovo.org.
Very good. And then you're on the Strongtown Slack as well. If people are on there, can they holler at you?
Yep. Hit me up.
Very good. Well, Austin, man, I appreciate sharing your story. We'll chat very soon.
Thanks, Jacob.
Thanks, friend.
Okay, bye.
Thanks so much for listening, everyone. If you're enjoying the content, please subscribe to It's the Little Things on iTunes, and we will chat next week. See ya.